Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome. I am so glad you're here. We've got a really important message and a really important topic to cover today. Today, we're going to be talking about grief. And I know in this world, we will have troubles, and some of us have had more than our fair share than others. Some of us have experienced tragedy that we thought would be unimaginable. And so if that is you, if you are someone who is feeling disappointed, devastated, and threadbare, and you need help to find your footing, if you are someone who wants to hear from someone who's a few steps ahead of you in the grieving process, or if you are in desperate need to anchor your faith as you're coping with a new reality, then our guest is here to do those very things for you. Today, we are really privileged to have Lisa Apollo. Now, Lisa is a widow. She was widowed at a young age. She is a mom to seven amazing children. And as a member of Widow Mama Collective, a Facebook community for young widows, she helps women find hope in the hard places of loss. She's a popular blogger, and she loves seeing women flourish in the strength of God's promises. And you can find more about her at LisaApollo.com. That's APPELO for that last name, LISA. Now, maybe you're thinking as we're starting here, well, you know what? I'm not a grieving widow, so this show is not for me. Don't go away, because what the statistics that Lisa gave me, which were really eye-opening, is that in the United States each year, there are over 12.5 million people grieving lost loved ones who have died. Approximately 5 grieving people for every death. And grief is not exclusive to mourning those we've lost. It extends into everything that upends our life, affecting millions of others. It may be job loss. It may be divorce. Maybe it's health issues. Maybe it's children who have gone astray. Maybe it's just your dreams that have crumbled, or your business that's closed. Or maybe you're walking with someone who is experiencing those things. We want you to walk away from this program today feeling equipped and empowered to walk alongside either your own grief or the grief that it's being experienced by someone you know and love. So Lisa, thank you so much for coming on the show today and for sharing your testimony and the truths and the hope that you found in your journey.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Jessica.
Well, I want to start with the tragic loss that your family experienced with the unexpected death of your husband, Dan. And I have to say, in reading this story in your book, it just gripped my heart. I think this is, you know, just the worst that we can imagine. And you have experienced that. And I'm just really grateful that you're willing to share this tender story with us.
Yeah. You know, I think for most of us who have experienced grief, grief comes unannounced. It comes on a very ordinary day and very ordinary moments where we get a phone call or news, or we go in, you know, to have something, you know, standard checked at the doctor, and life just can fall apart and change in a moment. And that is what happened to us. There were really no signs or symptoms that anything was wrong with my husband. I went to bed. I always say I went to bed happily married, and I woke up a widow. And, you know, in the space of 24 hours, I went to bed, and somewhere in the early morning hours of the next day, I heard, I woke up to some funny breathing, and I really wasn't even awake enough to fully process what was going on, but it just had stirred me. And so I kind of instinctively reached over my hand and touched my husband, nudged him and said, "It's just a nightmare." And I thought he would turn over and we would go back to sleep and wake up to his alarm, but he didn't. You know, he continued this funny breathing that had woken me up, and I woke up more and turned on the overhead light and could see that something was very wrong. And you being in the medical field would immediately recognize what was going on. I think my part of me was trying to grapple with the crisis that was at hand. But part of me, it just came from nowhere. And so, you know, you just do the things you have to do. We called 911. We started CPR. They took him by ambulance. But within 2 hours, a very kind ER doctor took me into the room you never want to go in and said that they had worked on him and done everything they could, and they had never been able to revive him. And so that was it. Like, life shattered, not just for me, but for our 7 children.
Yeah, I can't imagine that. And, you know, it's interesting you say, like, me being in the medical field, I would recognize it. But even that, you know, when things happen to people that we love, we lose our ability to rationally think. You can't even process or absorb what is going on. And, you know, Lisa, you've written a book about your experience, and you talk about, you know, the details of that encounter that you just described. And your book is called Life Can Be Good Again, Putting Your World Back Together After It All Falls Apart. And that is a big promise, especially for someone who is grieving. And I want to hear about what that means to you, but I want to read an excerpt from your book that I highlighted that I've honestly read several times, because you talk about how you saw God's goodness in all of this. And we hear a lot of people asking, how can a good God let bad things happen to good people? And so some of what you wrote was, I saw God's goodness in 100 ways on the day Dan died. God did not answer my prayer to preserve Dan's life, but God's goodness was all around me. It was His goodness to prompt me earlier that week to go with Dan on his business trip to the Florida Keys for 4 rare, beautiful days alone. It was God's goodness that Dan died at home, not on our trip, not at work, not while driving with our kids in the car. It was God's goodness. A friend happened to be at her mountain home near the camp where my son Ben was a counselor, and she drove over to be with him when I told him his dad had died. And honestly, Lisa, you go on for 2 more paragraphs talking about how you saw God's goodness in Dan's death. So how do you see that promise that life can be good again? What does that mean to you?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to see that goodness sometimes. I think writing that book, you know, a few years later, I could look back and see all those things very tangible. You know, I could see them standing out in relief against the heart of what was going on. It's hard when life feels bad to see that goodness. But that is a big promise, that life can be good again. I remember standing, you know, kind of looking at the shards of my life and thinking, I will never smile again. I don't think I'll really have real joy again. I'm going to do the best I can for my kids. I am going to try to show up as well as I can. They've lost one parent. They cannot lose another. But I don't think I will ever feel real joy again. But I wanted to. And I wish somebody was there who was a few steps ahead of me who could say, this is so hard. It is excruciating. Losses that we experience this side of heaven are too much for us. But there is a way through. And if you will do the very hard work of grief, and you know, a lot of that is laid out in the book, there is a way through, and you will begin to see that all of the goodness is not behind you, that life can be good again.
You know, I can think of so many people in my own personal life who need to hear that word of hope from someone who has lived it, from someone who has walked that road. And Lisa, even just this weekend, my daughter, who was in college, one of her friends from high school who had gone to college with her, just found out that that their dad unexpectedly died, completely unexpected, much like what you described happening with Dan. And I think about my daughter standing there with this boy who had, they've also experienced the loss of 3 other of their friends who have lost their parent in an unexpected or really tragic way. And it's hard to say that. And I think about those kids standing there watching, and I think about your 7 children. You didn't have the privilege of doing this alone, of just saying, okay, I just need to worry about me and my grief journey. You were stewarding their response and guiding their response, and how you responded was going to impact their faith. What have you learned as a mom, and how has that message resonated with your kids in standing there in this unspeakable tragedy and saying life can be good again and that God is still good?
Mm.
Yeah, I would say a few things. Jessica, I was so grief naive. I really had not experienced a major loss, and our culture doesn't really do a good job of preparing us for loss and how to walk through it. But I did know this. I knew that we would all grieve differently. And I remember saying at the very beginning, you know, after everybody went back home, after the memorial service and life quieted again, we were all sitting around the living room, and I remember saying, we're going to need to give each other a lot of grace. Because I knew that it would look different for my teen daughter than it did for my tween sons, than it did for my preschoolers, that somebody would have an up day when somebody was having a hard day, that I was learning all over again how to parent as a single mom. And that was a whole new learning curve for me, figuring out really as our family absorbed this loss and as that found its way through the layers of our rhythms and the way we did things and who did what in the family and who made decisions. It was just a lot. Several years later, you know, this is like the worst. It's hard enough, as you said, walking through your own grief, but when you can't fix the pain for your children, that is almost even harder. You just want to reach out and say, you know, let me just take that for you. Let me just fix that. But you can't. They have to walk it. And they will be different people. God will do things in them and show himself to them in ways that they would not see otherwise. And as painful as that is for us as parents to watch our children in any situation, any difficult situation where we want to rescue them from it, you know, my prayer was always that my children would learn to love the Lord with all of their heart and all of their soul and mind and strength. And I began to think, Lord, maybe this is what you will use. Not that you would cause it, but you can use it to pull them to you in an intimacy that they would not have known otherwise. And I have seen some fruit of that. You know, I've still got some kids at home that I'm raising, but I have seen some fruit of that.
One of the things that you talk about in your book, which, by the way, for people who are listening, you wrote this book as such a beautiful journey, Lisa, because you start with chapter one saying, this is too hard. I cannot do this. And I think that is such an honest, you know, affirmation for people who have walked there and felt that same way. And then in chapter two, you really go into the depth of emotions. And chapter two is called Your Emotions Are Welcome Here. And I'm sure for your children, exactly as you're describing, that each child grieves differently, each person grieves differently, but especially for your children, that can be really difficult. But welcoming those emotions instead of saying, you know, okay, no, like stop crying, pull it together. You talk about how Jesus welcomes those. And you even talk about the specifics of our grieving process, of the physicalness. And so I'm going to share some of this. And then when we come back from this next break, I'm going to ask you about that and about the fear that accompanies this journey, because fear is a really powerful emotion. But in the book, you talk about tears releasing stress, which I just thought, yes, this is why God made us to cry, because I'm going to read from your book here. The chemical makeup of our emotional tears, those tears that come from sadness, disappointment, loss, and anger, is completely different from tears that keep our eyes lubricated as we blink, or tears from irritants like dust or cutting an onion. And you say lubricating tears are 98% water, while emotional tears are filled with stress hormones and toxins. And those emotional tears carry those toxins and stress hormones out of our body. They also calm us. They lower our heart rate. They lower our blood pressure. They settle our physical stress responses and bring a sense of calm. You also talk about, and rightly so, how tears soften our pain. When we cry, our body releases endorphins, the feel-good hormones that work in two ways. They reduce our negative feelings of pain and increase the positive feelings of pressure. And you say, Lisa, what kindness God built into the details of his design for us. And you never have to apologize for tears. When we come back, I want to ask you about letting those emotions out and what happens when fear creeps in. How can we move forward again without fear? Friends, we are talking to Lisa Apollo about her book, Life Can Be Good Again, Putting Your World Back Together After It All Falls Apart. And we'll continue right after this break. Last year, because of you, Preborn's network of clinics saw over 58,000 babies saved. Thank you to all who made this possible. Let's celebrate these precious babies. Daisy and her husband had decided they never wanted kids, and when she found out she was pregnant, she immediately thought abortion. But after she and her husband met her baby on ultrasound and heard the heartbeat, their hearts melted and they chose life. Her baby Jeffrey is healthy and beautiful, and Daisy and her husband can't even imagine life without him. Each of these babies are truly miraculous, and every day, Preborn celebrates 200 miracles. $28 a month can be the difference between the life and death of a child. When a mother meets her baby on ultrasound and hears their heartbeat, it's a divine connection that doubles a baby's chance at life. Let's join together and help mothers choose life. Just dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 baby, or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
How sweet it is. How sweet it is. How sweet it is to be loved by Jesus.
Friends, it is indeed sweet to be loved by Jesus, and especially in the middle of unimaginable grief. And we are having a very tender heart-to-heart with Lisa Apollo, author of Life Can Be Good Again, Putting Your World Back Together After It All Falls Apart. You can find her at lisaapollo.com. And before the break, Lisa, I was giving our listeners an overview of chapter 2 about your emotions. So can you talk about how you process those? You go from shock, thinking, how in the world can I go forward? And then you're followed by emotions. What did that look like in your journey?
You know, the emotions of grief, just they run the gamut. I mean, you have everything from guilt and regret to despair, missing, the loneliness, the sadness. There's so much that goes along. It's not any one emotion. It's really not. And I think we have heard, or I had heard, of this stages of grief. But I really found, and all the people that I've talked to and walked with through grief tell me also that there's not really stages of grief, that we experience these emotions kind of all at once, sometimes conflicting. And so what do we do with all of these emotions? They're too much for us. They're too much for us to just hold inside. They're too much for us to, like, phone a friend and download to them. And so we have to do something. We have to, like, process all of this guilt and this regret and this sorrow, this loneliness. And I found that every day, and I really just stumbled onto this. It was not like I had some manual that was like, this is what you need to do. I was desperate. I was desperate for God to heal my heart. And so every day I would get alone with God, and I would open my journal, and I would pour out my emotions, my hard questions, my fears. I know you mentioned that in my journal. And some people may not journal. Some people may do it through prayer. Some people may go on a hard run where they sweat it out. There are a lot of ways to really just, you know, process through these. But after journaling through that, I would pick up my Bible, and I wouldn't go searching for certain scriptures. I was reading through the Bible for the year. And so I would pick up, and whatever that day's reading was, I would read. And I might be in Leviticus, I might be in Psalms, I might be in one of the Gospels. It didn't matter, because wherever I was, God would meet me on that page. And it was stunning to me how it felt, his word felt so personal and so practical to me. He would remind me who he is and what he does, his faithfulness. And it was enough hope. It was like I began to call it the exchange, my daily exchange, mm-hmm. because I would daily go to him and kind of let out all my emotion, give him all of my heart emotions, and then pick up the word and take his hope. And it was enough for the day. I could show up, you know, for my kids that day, show up for that day's tasks. It was not enough for the week. I had to go back again the next day and do it. And I found out, you know, as I began to study grief and the word, that the Bible has a name for it, and it's called lament. And this is an age-old process. Mm-hmm. We see this. We see David do this in Psalms, where he takes his hard emotion to God, but then he says, "But God, I trust you."
That is so hard. But my two favorite words in the history of ever, Lisa, that you just put together, saying, "But God." And I think that is the biggest pivotal moment. And that is what you're talking about in chapter 3 in the Great Exchange, because you go into great detail about how these emotions are natural. We're supposed to experience them. And you used a term earlier about being grief naive, which is, you know, a term that I'm just now starting to understand, and realizing that if you haven't been there, you just don't really even know what's about to roll over you. And you talk about how those emotions are good, but one of the dangers in the emotions is that they can feed you lies. And I think there's no emotion that feeds us lies more than fear. Fear creeps in, so much fear about just what is life going to look like going forward. And for you, I'm sure thinking, you have 7 children. How are you going to provide for them? What is life going to look like without a father? How do you move forward again without fear? Where does that exchange come in?
Fear is tough. And I think anyone who's experienced any kind of unexpected hardship, unexpected difficulty, has probably thought, when will the other shoe drop? You know, I think that once the door opens to these things that we never thought would happen, it was not even on my radar that my husband would ever die early. You know, I had some other fears, but that he would die on the pillow next to me was not even in any scenario. But once that hope happened, it really threw the door open to all kinds of other very real fears. I mean, we were a one-income family, and that income was now gone. I feared for my children's health. We had to, you know, go through that and make sure that they would be okay. I feared how my children would act out in this. How would they respond to this kind of deep loss? How in the world would I raise, you know, I have 5 boys. How was I going to raise 5 boys to adulthood without their dad? And honestly, at the beginning, I was paralyzed by fear. I was not able to make decisions. When I did make decisions, I was parenting out of fear. And it was just kind of had a vice grip on my thoughts. And I realized I had to do something with this fear, or I was never going to be able to make a step forward. And I was having coffee with a friend one day, a dear friend who is going through her own difficulty. She has MS, and she's 20 years in, so she has a lot of physical manifestations of it that she works with. And she said, I know this one. As I told her, you know, my fear, she said, I know this one. And she gave me the verse that says that we are to take all things captive to the truth of God. And so I began to do that. I began to take all of my thoughts captive to the truth of God. And I began to it was like a 3-step thing for me. And it was very clunky at first. But when a fear would come up, I would first identify the lie in it. Because all fear comes from the lie. Take the fear of our income, the income that was gone. God had always provided for us. That had been for a time through my husband's income, for a time through both of our incomes. But he would still provide for us. It would just come in a different way. And so I had to identify that lie. I had to take it captive. I would kind of imagine this lasso, just lassoing that lie and pulling it from my thoughts. And then I would replace it with the truth. And the truth is always based on the character of God or one of his promises. And in Philippians, God promises us that he will supply all of our needs according to his riches in Christ Jesus. And so I would very methodically, like, go through those steps every time I had any kind of fear. And at first it was a lot, but the more I did it, the less the fear had a grip on me. And the more I was operating in God's promises and God's truth than the lies. It doesn't mean I don't deal with fear. It just means that I have a very proactive way to work through that so that I can move forward and make decisions.
Well, you know, Lisa, as I was reading your book, of course, you're speaking from a very authentic place, having lost your husband so tragically, so unexpectedly, but it wasn't like, okay, that happened, and then life was good again. As I'm reading along in your book, I read just actually before, when I read in the first segment, when you found that God was good and you thanked God for his goodness, you recognized it in those circumstances. You tell that right after you tell a story about a health crisis that your son experienced. And for Lisa, for me, as I'm reading along, you know, I'm reading as a mom myself, but also as a pediatric nurse practitioner, and reading like this health crisis came for your son, and, you know, he had some back pain, and then the worst happened, the unimaginable. So can you share about how that story and looking at, okay, yes, you've lost your husband, but now life throws you another curveball. Life is throwing you something else that's hard. How did you experience that and manage your fear and then still look forward and say, I can see God's goodness?
You know, I think some of the tools that God had taught me and shown me early on, I was able to see in that next crisis, because we never are one and done. We want to say, I checked that off. God, you know, I've done the hard, I've learned my lessons, I'm good now, right? But that's not the way life works. And so, yeah, on a January, my son walked in. It was actually his last day of work, and he was going to leave the next day to his, like, dream university. And he walked in, he said, Mom, my back really hurts. And so I did, like, the mom thing, non-medical mom thing. I said, well, go take a shower, go take a hot shower. So he came out and he was crying. And this is like a 19-year-old son. And he said, I couldn't even take his shirt off. And so he said, you need to take me to the emergency room. And, you know, when your 19-year-old is crying and says, you need to take me to the emergency room, you go. And so I took him to the emergency room. They thought it was they really couldn't diagnose anything. The next morning, we took him to the doctor. The doctor thought it was a bad golf swing. We get an MRI. This is all happening quickly because I was trying to get him to the university. So the MRI showed that he had a lemon-sized tumor on his spine, and it was super painful. And that was a Saturday morning that the doctor called us, and we had to wait till Monday to get into the neurosurgeon. So we didn't have any other news. We only knew there's a lemon-sized tumor on your spine. Sorry about that. So as I'm waiting, you know, I went in to take a shower, and I was so overcome again by fear, all the what ifs. I mean, they just downloaded immediately, and immediately, you know, that same vice grip of fear just cascaded over me. And I remember kneeling on the floor of my shower, and I was just weeping, water's going over me, and I was thinking, you know, I don't know how this is going to turn out. I don't know what the future holds for my son or for us. But I can thank you in advance for the things I do know. Ooh, brings it back. Not many people have asked about this. And so, right down the floor of the shower, I said, thank you that you will walk us through this. You will not leave us alone. Thank you that you have everything we need as we walk through this. Thank you for your provision. Thank you for your wisdom, for the decisions that we will have to make. Just began to thank him for the things that I could. And, you know, it doesn't immediately make things better. My son had a grueling weekend of pain. It ended up being a benign tumor. It was a very serious, serious situation, but it was benign. He was followed up with some treatment and emergency surgery. But, man, to have walked through these situations and know that God will meet you. I think, Jessica, we always wonder how in the world we'll deal with things. You know, we watch somebody walk through something, we think, I could never do that. But we can, because God's grace is there for us as we're walking through. It's not there before, but as we're walking through that situation, God's grace is with us.
I confess, Lisa, I mean, I was teary in reading this because I just can't imagine, your journey as a mom. I mean, anytime our kids are sick or they're injured, you know, our mom brains go to the very worst. And then seeing this happen to you, it just felt unfair as I was reading it. Honestly, I just kind of felt a little outraged on your behalf, thinking, no, this cannot be happening to her. She's already experienced all of this. But what was really impactful to me, Lisa, was that you go on in this and you continue. Like I told you, two more paragraphs of thankfulness. And I talk a lot about the science of gratitude. And you don't really so much talk about, oh, hey, okay, well, we're commanded to be grateful, so we need to be grateful. But the way that you phrased it was the cost of thanklessness, what it cost us if we are thankless instead of thankful. So I would love for you to share some of what you learned about how much more painful it is to be thankless than how hard it seems to be grateful in that circumstance.
Yeah. You know, as I began to study what God's word says about gratitude, it's unbelievable how much is in there. Yes, he instructs us to be thankful, and so we know there's going to be blessing in that. But we know, like Philippians says, that when we give our request to him with gratitude, that he gives us peace. And so there is so much that happens as we unpack our heart and we begin to look around and find the good. And this is not toxic optimism. This is not to slap a Band-Aid over situations that are very painful. This is to hold two realities at once. I'm hurting, God, and yet your goodness is carrying me through this. Your goodness is all around me. And I think what that does is it can lift us off of our circumstances and keep us focused where we need to be, which is on God's activity, because he is always active around us. And really, that's the only way to move forward. You know, you look at the story of the 10 lepers that Jesus encountered, the 10 lepers, and they all wanted healing. They all begged Jesus for healing. And when Jesus said, go show yourself to the priest, go show yourself to the rabbi, as they went, they were healed. Well, nine of them kept going in their exuberance and their, you know, glee of being finally healed of this, you know, scourge of leprosy. They went on to the rabbi. One went back, fell at his knees, and thanked Jesus. And Jesus looks at the one and he says, we're not 10 healed and yet only one is here. And yet only one had that intimacy with Jesus. The other nine were gone. They actually walked away from him. One saw that gratitude took him to the feet of Jesus, and he had that intimacy with Jesus.
Lisa, that is such a beautiful picture. And when we come back, I want to finish talking about that and just share that as I was reading in your book, I just got chills all over, because as I was experiencing your experience, I come to what you write as Psalm 84:11, which I want you to know is the verse that I put when I sign all of my books. So to see that heart alignment is incredible. Well, we have so much more to talk about. We'll be right back continuing our conversation. Well, we do trust in a God who will never fail, even in the midst of unspeakable tragedy. We are having a conversation with Lisa Apollo, author of Life Can Be Good Again, Putting Your World Back Together After It All Falls Apart. And before the break, Lisa and I were talking about her decision to choose gratitude and the cost of not choosing gratitude. And Lisa, I was right in the middle of saying that you wrote Psalm 84:11. As I'm reading all of this, this is just a verse that I say very often here on the show, and I'll share it again. For the Lord God is a sun and a shield. The Lord bestows favor and honor, or grace and glory in my version. No good thing does he withhold from those whose walk is blameless, from those who walk uprightly. And Lisa, looking at that, I think that is a fundamental truth that we have to embrace if we are going to find that life can be good again, recognizing that some things that we see as good, God is infinitely wiser than we are. And things we see as good, he sees as not, and that he will not let anything fall on us that he does not see as good. And so just want to give you an opportunity to say any last words about choosing gratitude before I've got some questions for you about idols that we have in suffering. But any last words about gratitude?
Yeah, I think that I think the Bible reframes that for us, because I think that we can accuse God of withholding from us, you know, prayers, desires of our heart, things we've prayed for a long time, things that haven't come about for us. And, you know, I stumbled on that verse, honestly, Jessica, when I was reading through the Bible for that year. That's the beauty of reading through the Bible, is that you encounter these things that I don't think I'd ever read. I don't think it had stuck out to me. And it became a key reframe for me to trust that God had everything that I needed. It doesn't always feel like that, but to trust it.
And this is the prayer of gratitude you shared from your book. Lord, forgive me for my thanklessness. Forgive me for not stopping to thank you for who you are and all you have done. You are good and you do good. Thank you for saving me and giving me your righteousness. Thank you for keeping me from what I wanted that would have harmed me. Thank you for your provision and presence in this hard place. Thank you in advance for all you will do. Open my eyes to all you are doing and give me a heart of deep gratitude. And Lisa, for you to say that, you know, you have such power in your words and saying that, because you have walked such a road of grief. And one of the things that was really interesting to me was your sharing very transparently about idols that come to light when we experience suffering. I don't think there's a lot of people who are talking about this, but how can we begin healing our anger and bitterness when it comes to that?
Yeah, I think any kind of difficulty shakes us so that it's a revealer. I say that suffering is a revealer, really, of our heart, because the things that we're counting on, the things that where we misplaced our hope, those things are gone. And so even if you know, I think for me, I wouldn't have known some of the idols that were deeply buried in my heart. But when life kind of emptied, I could see that I had two idols especially that were difficult. And one was an idol of self-sufficiency. I did not want to have to be in need. I didn't want to have to depend on anybody else, or really even to be utterly dependent on God. I wanted to know that you know, my bank account was enough and that I was enough for my children. And so I realized I had an idol of self-sufficiency, but I also had an idol of control. And that shaking, you know, revealed that what I can control and what I can't control. And then you mentioned anger and bitterness. I think those can come in. I honestly did not, you know, I think the Lord spared me from really grappling with anger, but I've walked with enough people who have grappled with anger in their grief. And to know that that's number one, that that's a very common emotion. And so to not beat ourselves up there, up about it, but also not to stay there. How do we deal with anger? I think if we deal with anger, we'll never taste bitterness. It's the dealing with the anger and dealing with the regret and the disappointment that keep us from actually moving to that place where bitterness has taken root. And I think we just have to I think we have to acknowledge the disappointment. Disappointment is the difference between, you know, life as we wanted it and life as it actually is. And that can happen in small ways and it can happen in huge ways. To acknowledge that, to go to God, this goes back to the lament, to say, Lord, this is not what I wanted. This is not what I ordered. But here I am, and you have allowed it, and I trust, Lord, that you have good for me here, and you have joy for me, and you will walk with me through this. And I think just honestly doing that over and over and tendering our heart to him and helps us process that anger so that it doesn't move to a place of bitterness.
Because the flip side of all of this is needing grace. Grace for yourself and grieving a shattered heart and recognizing that we are human, that we are going to experience emotions and that it's really, really hard. So how do you find grace in grieving a shattered heart, Lisa?
You know, I had always known growing up in church, I'd always known about God's grace, that we're saved through grace. So I always knew about that salvation grace. And anybody who is maybe new to the Christian faith or has walked with Christ for a long time, you may have heard of that grace, the salvation grace that God gives us to have a relationship with him. I think what I didn't know was God's sustaining grace, that when we are in a situation that is too hard, you mentioned that I said, this is too hard, I cannot do this. I would write those words at the top of my journal page for probably well over a year. And by this, I meant everything. I cannot single parent. I can't make all these decisions. I can't handle all these emotions. I can't handle the loneliness. I cannot even begin to fathom a future that is gone. It was all overwhelming to me. But God's grace met me, and it's hard to, you know, it's one of those things that it's hard to give words to. I think the best way for me was on the nights that were lonely. You know, after my kids would go to bed and the house would quiet and the busyness of the day was gone and my to-do list was gone and I had to sit with my grief. I had to sit with my loss. And the times, the evenings where I normally would have, you know, enjoyed those times with my husband, I was alone. And honestly, the pain was grueling. I only know that God's grace sustained me through each one. I didn't have to turn to a substance. I didn't have to turn to something else. God's grace got me through until that pain eventually lessened and softened.
Well, one of the things that you say, Lisa, is that when we suffer a loss like this, that it's not like God says, oh, gosh, okay, well, the plan I had for your life, that's not going to work out. So we're going to need a plan B. Let's alter this. Instead, you frame it as leading us toward chapter 2. What does that mean?
Yeah, this is really key. And this did not come early in my grief. This came somewhere in the second year where I think I was alone in my car. I was just journaling out to God, and the thought came, I do not like my life. And on the heels of that came this, that while this had been unexpected for us, while Dan's death had been unexpected for us, it was not unexpected God. You know, I think that I had for so long been thinking that I was just going to make the best of the leftovers of my life, that I had gotten second best, that my first best was gone, that I would just show up as well as I could for my children and make the most of second best. And when God kind of nudged me, the Spirit nudged me and said, this was not unexpected to God, I realized that God does not give us second best, that he does not give his children second best. And this is not an option B. But this was this chapter 2, and it, because God had allowed it, by definition, it would have as much joy and goodness and life, abundant life, as all the years before. And I did not immediately feel better when I, you know, began to reframe it not as an option B, but as a plan, as a chapter 2. I did not immediately feel better, but what I did have was kind of something that I could lean into so that as I, you know, went through my emotions of grief, I could know that if I would do the hard work, that there would be good, there would be joy, and there would be abundant life, as much this side of loss as that side of loss.
Lisa, that is just, it is really humbling and stunning to hear you say that, because I think, you know, there are people who have not experienced this kind of grief, who struggle with those concepts, you know, and then to hear someone with a testimony like yours stand there and say, but God is good, it is so much more powerful. And so I would love for you to speak to people who are still fresh in this, whether that's in time, whether that's intensity of emotion, they're not as far along. What encouragement do you have to tell them to hang on to hope?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's a big promise to say life can be good again. And we can almost wince when we hear that, because we can think that you don't know my pain. You don't know what I've lost. You don't know what I'm facing. And you're right. Each one of us comes to these places differently. No two losses are the same. No two diagnoses are the same. What I would tell you is that God will absolutely meet you in this. And you will find him in ways that you never would have otherwise. There will be a sweetness to your relationship and an intimacy that you will never want to give back. As much as we would love to trade the pain, we will never want to trade the relationship that we have gained with Christ. And really the heaven focus, to know that the things of this world, man, they're short. They grow strangely dim. And that our life should be about the things that matter and the heaven that God has prepared for us. And that is a good shaking. It's not one we would ever, ever ask for ourselves. But if we will give God all the pieces of our broken heart, he will reshape what has shattered.
And you write, after you continue to talk about the ways that you saw God's goodness in such a terrible situation, you say, whether we get a happy ending or endure a devastating loss, giving thanks, going back to giving thanks, helps us see that God has not abandoned us. Giving thanks in everything lifts our eyes off our circumstances and helps us see that even in the hard, God is ruling in all the ways, big and little, and he cares for us. And Lisa, one of the things I appreciate about your book is it did feel like a journey just looking through the chapters. So I want to encourage those listeners who are in the middle of a grieving journey to think this is what Lisa has walked through and has prepared for you, thinking this is too hard. I cannot do this. To your emotions are welcome here. I'm reading you the chapter titles. To the great exchange, where she talked about exchanging the truth, the lies that her emotions were feeding her for the truth. Finding your footing. The God who is for you. And I know it can seem like that's not the truth in such a terrible circumstance, but she talks about that. Then making space for deep grace, desperate for good in a life gone bad, crushing your fear, the enemy in the midst of this, hanging on to threadbare hope. Let's be awkward together, which I really appreciate being authentically awkward, Lisa, because it can be really hard to get out there again and to have your life and you feel awkward thinking, I don't really feel like I want to be here. But you talk through that. You also talk about letting God reshape your shattered heart and finding your smile in chapter 2. I cried through that. You also have two great resources, an appendix that gives you 40 promises of God and an appendix that gives you a grace guide for hard seasons. Lisa, where can people connect with you and find out more about your community?
Yeah, they can find me at lisaappolo.com. If they go to lisaappolo.com/hope, I have a resource there called 7 Days of Hope for Your Shattered Heart. And they can, you know, I'm on all the social media as Lisa Appolo. I would love to connect you. It's such an honor to walk with people who are walking through pain and difficulty.
Absolutely. And once again, the book is called Life Can Be Good Again, Putting Your World Back Together After It All Falls Apart. And friend, I hope that wherever you are, whatever you've experienced, whatever you're walking alongside a loved one with, that you can embrace that truth, because you've heard it straight from Lisa, who very authentically and transparently has told you how her life can be good again. Thank you so much for joining us. And until we see you next time, may the Lord bless you and keep you and make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord give you peace. We look forward to having you join us next time. Share this program with a friend, and we will prescribe more hope for healthy families.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.